Okay, here I am with my, to date, my most prestigious guest, the Honorable Carolyn Kirk, Mayor Carolyn Kirk. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
Very exciting to have you here.
Yeah, the podcast is a really cool concept. Yeah. I've been listening to a couple of them.
Which ones have you listened to?
Well, I listened to the one, I'm pretty sure it was a podcast where the graduate student interviewed you.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that a podcast or was that a video?
It's kind of like a video one, yeah, with Myra Dettelbach.
Okay, yeah. All right. So yeah. That was a, I know I it was a lot, but it was maybe a couple sections, yeah. Minutes at a time. And then I listened to the Kim Smith one the other day.
Kim Smith. Great,
yep.
Contributor.
Yeah.
She did a lot of work on the Harbor Walk, the design.
Oh, and the, yeah. Gosh. And Farm Creek's been down there landscaping and pulling the gardens back together. So soon they're going to be butterflies at the gardens.
Be a lot of butterflies. She, do you know about her milkweed project? Anything about it?
Is that the movie?
No, that her movie's. She just got her movie posters made, but milkweed is the plant that monarch butterflies go to and eat. And if there is milkweed, like if you plant milkweed in a corner of your yard, you will have a ton of, eventually you'll have a ton of butterflies.
Okay.
So she's the butterfly lady. You know, she might be, you know how there's the cat lady,
yeah.
A little bit crazy.
Yeah.
She may be the crazy butterfly lady. But she put it out there on the blog, like she's ordering a ton of these milkweed plants.
Oh, I didn't see that.
There's like 100 people that are ordering milkweed plants for Gloucester.
Oh,
so you know, the migration. If you know anything about these monarchs, I never really cared about the monarch butterfly, but now learning from her, like the story is actually pretty fascinating. Like they migrate all the way down to Mexico. These same butterflies go from Mexico, and they come and they fly all the way back up here. And milkweed is the thing that you know, makes them.
Wow.
And the big stop is Eastern Point. You know how Eastern,
yeah,
Point jets out there. So it's all very interesting.
It's very interesting.
Kim Smith getting a lot of time from Mayor Kirk right there. Very interesting. But yeah, we're going to ask you a bunch of questions.
Okay.
One of the first questions is, you're not originally from here. What brought you to Gloucester, though?
My husband. I love. So I was living in the suburbs of Boston. I came out here from upstate New York and came to Boston College. And then ended up living in Alston, Brighton, Newton, all the,
yeah, fun,
you know,
town.
Fun, but all student kind of,
oh yeah,
post.
Best time of your life right there.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so I had a bike. I was an avid cyclist. And I brought my bike up to Gloucester. I'll never forget this. I parked on the boulevard. I had a map that would take me all around Cape Ann, and got to St. Peter's Square, riding the bike. Mm. And I didn't know where to go, that intersection, right?
Yeah.
And so I pulled my map out and I said, I'm looking at the map, and this really cute guy stopped, and he says, do you need directions? And
wow.
I was like, yeah. And he was a reporter for the Gloucester Times. So he had a camera around his neck.
Wow.
He was on assignment.
Wow.
And we got talking, and little known facts. I was working at a newspaper at the time. I was working at the Tab newspapers out in Newton. It was a weekly.
I dated a girl that worked for the Newton Tab. I mean, this is before your time. Like, this is back in 87.
Oh, okay. I was there probably 85, 86. What was her
name? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Allison Cohen.
Allison Cohen.
Yeah.
Was she in advertising? Was she a writer?
Well, she actually went to BU for advertising. That was her. She is tied into why we handle lobsters at this particular spot.
Gosh.
We at Miles, was it Miles Standish Hall at BU? We designed a graphic to sell lobsters on her computer. It's like, you know, way back when.
Oh my gosh. You know, the name rings a bell because I desperately wanted to be a journalist, but I was in production, like making the ads. And so I was really friends with, I was a proofreader. And so I was good friends with all the ad reps. So we rented a house in Newport one summer.
Oh.
And I'm sure
were you a South Shore girl?
South Shore.
That's a big South Shore thing.
Well,
like people don't do that here, but
yeah.
Like when on this, like south of Boston, like and actually a lot of Boston kids, like they will go like 20 kids will rent, they get shares. They call them shares. Yeah. And they'll rent a summer place in Newport.
Yes. That's what we did. But that was the summer that I met Bill. And so my girlfriends down in Newport were like, why do you keep going to Gloucester? You got to come to Newport. And I'm like, oh, my heart's in Gloucester. So Bill and I met, it was June of, he said to me that day during the conversation, he said, how old are you? I said, 24 and a half. And he goes, who says the half when you're 24?
That was his move. That was his move. See, that was, what do you call that? Passive aggressive. Right. That was his move right there. I like that.
But I said, when your birthday is December 21st, you always say the half, even when you're 24. So I don't remember the year necessarily. I'd have to do the math. But I always remember how old I was when I met him. Anyway, so he said, he looked at the map and he tried to help me get directions. And then he told me that the map was one of those maps. It only had the route on it of the roads you're supposed to go on. It didn't have any other road.
Wow.
So it was just a black line. Yeah. And so Bill's trying to tell me to go down Roger Street and to go down Harbor Loop. And I said, well, the loop's not on my map. And he's like, well, it doesn't go anywhere. So we got in our first fight.
Passive aggressive. He's a player. I never knew that Bill Kirk was a player. He was that whole, like, oh, I'm not going to be so easy to get thing. Bill Kirk, you dog, you.
It's so funny. And then, so anyway, I wouldn't go down the loop. And now I realize how stupid that was now. But anyway, but I knew where to find him. But then I continued my ride. I went through Rockport and I came down. I'm coming down the stretch in Annisquam and I got a flat tire. Ooh. I had to walk my bike with a flat tire all the way from Annisquam back to the boulevard where my car was.
You did not.
I did. And to this day, I say to my husband, why didn't you come get me? He's like, I didn't know you.
See, I was thinking the story.
I just met you that morning.
I thought the story was going to be that he was stalking you from like 200 yards behind and he came to your rescue and put the bike on his back.
No.
And like,
No, but he knew. I get this phone call like a week later at the Tab newspapers and it's Bill Kirk looking to ask me out on a date.
Wow.
And so,
So he didn't call you the next day. That's the other rule of the player, the 24-hour rule. He went out a whole week. He's a player. I'm telling you, Bill Kirk. I knew I loved him. When we were on the cigar cruises on the Lannan.
Yeah.
He is. I really enjoy your husband's company. I don't hang out with him nearly enough.
I know. So 24 years later, we're still married.
Very cool.
At the time, the Gloucester Times had a residency requirement. If you were a reporter covering this city, you had to live in the city. So he lived in the city. And I was commuting. Now I'm coming up from Boston and
Newton.
Your
friends are down in Newport.
Right, my friends are all down in
You're all over the place.
Exactly.
At that age, though, that's what you do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I told him, when he wanted me to move up here, I said, look, I'm not doing that until I get a ring on the finger.
Ooh.
So.
See, you knew he was a player and you had to. So I'm just going to bang on this theme. Bill, when you're listening, I'm just going to bang on this theme. You are. I'm just kidding.
But yeah, that's what brought me to Gloucester.
That's a great story. I wonder how many people knew that. You're probably your close friends, but I think we're breaking like great. That's a great story. Thank you.
Well, I have been asked that before, and it's been encapsulated in one or two paragraphs, not certainly embellished the way
I
that
love it.
You know, the true story is.
Well, okay. Here's my first obvious question. Here's a question I have. What ways do you think that the city has changed for the better since you got here? What do you think you got here and what changes have you seen that you say, hey, these are great things that have happened here since you got here? Now, not necessarily as a mayor or things that you directly had impact on, but what, like the changes that you've seen in Gloucester in the last 20 years or whatever.
Yeah. So it's probably 87 since when I actually moved here, 88 probably is more like it because we got married in 89. For a long time, Joey, I just worked. I was 20 years taking the train into Boston or commuting into Boston.
Head down, not really looking at stuff around you.
Yeah, and I think that's true for a lot of people in the community is they want the roads to be decent. They want the train to run on time. They want the bridge to be open. They want, I remember. There was never a laundromat that was open at night. You couldn't do anything after 6, 7, 8 o'clock. I mean, the city just shut down. I think, that's something that's changed is you can actually do stuff at night here. And that wasn't always the case. I can remember being You know,
I think what you just hit on was what the notes that I took for myself. When I pointed to something that was a big change in the city, I think it happened right around 20 years ago, this restaurant renaissance.
Yeah.
And I think it started the White Rainbow was like a high-end restaurant in town. But Au Beaujolais was a restaurant on Union Hill, where the Union Hill coffee shop was. And they were doing French, really nice restaurant, really fun, hip, great menu and stuff like that. And then after that, the Square Cafe, Eric Lorden, and then he moved to Passports, and then Passports, and all these great, and then the music thing.
Yeah.
Like there was at one time, the music scene. There was the Rum Line, and then there was Blackburn Tavern. And after that, there really wasn't a whole lot of live music venues. Now there's like 10 at any given night. It's like 10 different places you can see.
It's incredible.
So, the art scene has always been here, but like it's even more intense. But I think the restaurant renaissance woke up downtown and brought people from outside of communities like it's funny, like all these people from Manchester and stuff like that, friends of mine from Manchester, they come to Gloucester for their entertainment and their dining and stuff like that. And like more and more of these people that like may have, you know, not come to Gloucester before or been afraid to come to Gloucester before, now all of a sudden like, wow, this is like the coolest hip city going.
Yeah, I would completely agree. I think that's probably the biggest change that I've seen.
You know, your administration, there's a guy named Stephen Winslow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I say this, is this a right term? Is he part of your administration?
Yeah, he works for the city. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I see his name attached to a lot of positive initiatives. What is his role?
Well, he's grant funded. So he's one of these folks that we've been able to bring on staff that's a total, in some ways, it's a total luxury, okay, that we're able to bring in grant money and staff a guy like Steve Winslow. And he's primarily funded through what's called a Mass in Motion grant, which is through the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So he's assigned to anything that has to do with movement. So Newell Stadium, he is the project manager on Newell Stadium, looking at the bike ordinance and bike lanes and sharrows.
Is he involved with Burnham's Field?
And Burnham's Field, absolutely.
Those are three monster positive. That's what I say. Like every time his name comes up to me, and it's like his name is attached to all these like really cool things.
Yeah, which again, you know, we've run the staff pretty lean, you know, and which was the whole. We'll talk about maybe the Good Harbor Breach footbridge a little bit later, but that whole dilemma was also about. Do you use existing staff and pull them off all the
allocating
other stuff?
Resources.
And so you have a guy like Steve Winslow who can only perform within the parameters of the grant.
Mm.
So you have the luxury of saying, you know, tackle Burnham's Field. And he's very aggressive in what he does. So he's been able to be the face of those great projects.
It's funny you mentioned this grant, the grant thing, because one of my questions was that it seems... your administration, more than any other administration, has been really effective securing grants to get things done. Is that because you hire extremely gifted grant writers, or is there some other reason? And are any of them salaried, or like is your philosophy, we can't have enough of these grant writers because they're paying for them, they get paid for by themselves, and they're doing all this cool stuff?
Well, there's a couple things, and we have a running tally for my administration. And take a guess how much in grant money we've brought in since January 1st, 2008.
You know something? I'm going to say something, and it's going to sound ridiculous. I have zero idea. I'm going to say $1 million. I have no clue.
$20 million.
Grant money since when?
Since my administration took office.
$20 million is astounding.
Yeah.
And that's,
so we have a running tally. That includes CDBG, so that's entitlement. It doesn't include any of the special ed grants, but it's a $1.2 million for the Harbor Walk, $3 million for MassWorks, $500,000 here. It's all so much of our, even though we have high water and sewer, we are getting funding, subsidies through an... it's a long story, the SRF program. So you take all that and you add it up. We are adding that kind of value into what we're able to deliver. But we don't have grant writers. Each department head and manager is responsible for writing their own grant. So it's kind of like what I tell the community. If the community comes to me with some great idea, I'm like, go make it happen. Right. You know, that's
you're good at that. You're like, yeah. Oh, you want to, go ahead. Get the people together. And then when you get it all, when you're ready to start working, digging your hands in, let me know.
But Joey, all the great things in this community that are happening today are exactly because of the citizens who've come together. The Harbortown district, that is so cool. Yeah. All those groups came
Catherine
together.
Catherine Ryan and all those people, they're fantastic people.
You know, the wind turbines, that was a group of citizens who were like, we want to do this. Okay, let's go do it. And I feel like the orchestra leader. Same thing with city staff. Same thing. Guys, you know, you want to fight for your own survival, you want to keep your job, you better rewrite that grant.
There you go. City Hall Tower, they have that big thing. Bananas is having their fundraiser.
Yes, for City Hall restoration. Yeah. And so that's what we so the fire chief writes his grants. The public health director writes her grants. Mike Hale writes his grants. Larry Durkin, the environmental engineer, writes his grants. Steve Winslow rewrites and rewrites his grants so he can keep that revenue stream coming in. Yeah. And they're really motivated, and it allows them to do things beyond the pedestrian, you know, what they really can have passion about and point to as an accomplishment.
There you go. Do you have a good relationship with? Are there certain mayors and surrounding communities that you have relationships with and you talk with frequently?
Oh yeah, the mayors are our own little group of people who can come together and you can rely on. So we meet once a month, and I'm very diligent about going to those meetings. I make sure that I go to the monthly meeting every month, and it's camaraderie. For example, Kim Driscoll, the mayor of Salem. She just told me about the Department of Revenue has determined that we could combine our water and sewer enterprise accounts into one rather than two. So, but you still have to have a separate rate. So we talked about pros and cons and why she would do that and what made that attractive. I brought it back to our CFO and said, Jeff, what do you think about that? And he's going to look into it and we're going to debate it. But that was an idea. She's paying attention to that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is the municipal government intricacies. I mean, we are all CEOs of our communities. We're responsible. I'm responsible for over $100 million in revenue every single year. And we're a strong mayor form of government. You know, we don't have a city manager. And so you have to be on top of these details. So I'll call Thatcher Keyser up in Amesbury or Donna Holliday. I spoke at their economic development meeting. They're trying to get a project done in Newburyport. So Donna invited me up and I spent an hour with their Chamber of Commerce and some economic development folks talking about how we've been able to get things done in Gloucester. So the mayors are tight. We're a tight, tight group. And it doesn't matter how long you've known each other. New mayor comes in, we razz them. They call me the master of disaster. That's my nickname.
Nice. Oh, God. Some of your early press conferences.
Anymore, Joey.
Well, hey, it's a learning curve for anyone, right? It's a learning curve for anyone. Do you feel like you have, like you're in these meetings with these people? Are you competing for some certain groups of state funding or federal funding with these same mayors? Or not often? And has it never come to that? Like, you're not like, it's not a chess match where
it's really advocating. We're advocating for the program. We're advocating for good policy that supports local government. You know, New Bedford and Gloucester might compete a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I've told the mayor of New Bedford, you know, Gloucester's just going to start leading the pack on this fish crisis because we can't wait and continue to just bash NOAA and hope that money falls from the sky. We really have to change up our strategy completely. And so, you know, there's a little bit of a disagreement in how we approach some of the advocacy around that right now. And I'll see the mayor of New Bedford tomorrow and I'll talk to him. But I'm 6 years in and he's only 2 years in. Mm. So he's a little bit tentative to break new ground. Whereas I'm feeling a little bit more.
People need to understand too that in the city of New Bedford, I think the statistic was either that their harbor is either 75 or 80% publicly owned.
Yes.
And our harbor is the inverse of that.
Exactly.
You know, our harbor, there's, I don't know if there's less than 20%, which is owned by the city. So the pools of money that you can get from the Seaport Bond Bill
right.
and stuff like that, it has to go. It can't go to private industry.
Exactly.
So it has. So you only have so many places where you can
exactly.
allocate that money.
Right. That's
yeah.
exactly
so
right.
It's like try to be creative. Like okay, and out of those 15-20%, a lot of them are playgrounds, which
right.
has nothing to do with port infrastructure.
Right. Right. It's yeah. the Harbor Master's Wharf.
Yeah.
It's I-4C2. It's the Harbor Walk. It's, you know, it can't be Joey's Dock.
No.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
So
what as far as, here's the question. What are the top three things at the top of your wish list for things you'd like to have happen in Gloucester that haven't happened yet? What are some of the couple of the things that you just like to see happen that
well,
like it just hasn't happened or we're on the cusp of being able to do something?
You know, we have to address the infrastructure of our schools, and there's a lot of hoo-ha in the newspaper going on about this, and the school committee is firm in its commitment to the configuration of the elementary schools that are in place today.
The five elementary schools.
Mm-hmm. And that journey of determining that, Joey, started 10 years ago and was actually part of the inspiration for me even running for office in 2002, 2003, which was the year I ran for school committee. And the notion that Fuller can house every last elementary child in the city is just completely false. Fuller can probably hold 750 kids, and that's tight.
And how many are there?
There's 1,500.
Oh, well, there you go.
So you immediately have this dilemma of this giant school versus smaller schools. And so you start building in these inequities in the system. So it's been 5 years since an elementary student has gone to the Fuller School. It's been 5 years since there was an elementary student in the Fuller School. So, and the school committee redistricted over 400 children and dispersed staff and built out the other schools. So this train has been in motion. So the logical conclusion is, okay, that's the blueprint of the school committee. Now let's look at a capital plan for those school buildings. And West Parish is absolutely flagged as the school in the worst condition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
there been studies?
Oh, yeah. The MSBA, which will fund half of a renovation or a rebuild project, scrutinizes this. They don't let you spend a dime of their money unless you've done all the studies, you've done all the work, you've hired all the architects. So that's one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is, okay, well, what do you do with Fuller School? And we've been sitting here for 5 years heating that school that has been empty. So $300,000. So I've said, you know what, guys? Enough is enough. Time to make the hard decisions. I talked to the Cape Ann Symphony. I said, you know, we can't in good conscience have you guys in there. We got no heat for you. The fire alarms don't work. I got to hire a firemen to stand there when they have 500 people for a concert. It doesn't make any sense. So they're now at the Manchester Essex School Auditorium, which is a good home for them for now. Who knows if they'd ever come back. So you start, you know, kind of saying, all right, gotta follow through on these decisions that have been made years prior. So, but anyone who's new to the discussion coming in and seeing this is like, oh my God, what the hell's going on? We got, you know, they want to build a new school and what about Fuller? And, you know, the whole conversation starts over again. And so it's really important. I think we have a history lesson about how the school committee came to this point.
Mm-hmm.
The district has lost 1,000 students in 12 years. That's 25%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even with the charter school kids coming back or St. Anne's children integrating, we're not getting kids back in the numbers.
Explain to me what that means. I am I don't read any of the school committee or know what's going on with Gloucester Schools. What does that, when you lose 1,000 students, what does that mean monetarily? Does that mean that we lost revenue, money that would have been going towards the school system?
Well, you lose some state money because it's part of your state funding is triggered by a formula that is based on the number of students that you have. It's not a huge number. But really what it means is from a space standpoint, do you really need to maintain the square footage that you're currently maintaining? The Fuller School is 176,000 square feet. You could fit three of our elementary schools in that building. You could fit East Gloucester there, Vets, and probably West Parish. And people say, well, why don't you do that? And so, but the answer is that the school committee, based on a lot of public input when Fuller was closed, because that was, the school committee went through a process and said, all right, we know we have to close the school. We know we have to shrink the square footage because we don't need as much as, so what school are we going to close? School committee took 2 years to study, you know, what's the ideal configuration for our elementary schools? A lot of public input, hundreds of parents coming out.
Oh, I can't imagine.
You know.
Is there anything that people would be more passionate about?
Absolutely. No, right? And we had to stand there and say why we picked their school to close, you know, to the parents of Fuller and explain it to the other parents in the district.
So, tough decisions.
Oh, absolutely. Tough decisions. Yeah. Absolutely.
What a good politician, you know, and we'll talk about this later, but like, you know, the good politicians make tough decisions.
Right. And that was 2007, mm-hmm. Joey. That was 2007. So here we are in 2013. School committee just following through on this decade set of decisions and public input that's already been made. So, you know, we need to remind people of the history. The other thing that kind of just really makes me crazy is we have a moment in time in my administration where we can build West Parish School or make the investment that's needed without an override because of the way that we're managing the financials of the city. We're saying we have debt that's expiring. We're going to replace debt with debt. So we're not going to impact any other service in the city. Plus, we're going to get half paid for by the state. These moments pass.
Sort of like the sewer system. Mayor Alper didn't do the sewer system.
Absolutely.
And we ended up with the step system in West Gloucester.
Right. North Gloucester.
Disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people would say that was an absolute disaster. Like, one of the worst decisions ever made in the city. I don't know. I'm not saying that. This is what other people say.
Forgoing
getting it paid for.
Right. Forgoing getting it paid for was a decision that every single citizen today is paying for through those water and sewer rates.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Yeah. Like, you talk to anyone that I wasn't really dialed in, but I, you know, people on the waterfront, the fishermen always say that was like one of the worst things that ever happened.
Yeah. You know, and I fear that, you know, the same opportunity is going to slip through our hands if people don't really understand the history and the school committee's policy around the school configuration. Mm-hmm. And it's very simple. K-5 schools, 2 or 3 classes per grade. So 2 kindergartens or 3 kindergartens, 2 first grades or 3 first grades, and smaller learning communities. These are our babies, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, at the middle school, it can be a house set up. And the high school is certainly strong set of programs there. But at elementary, it's a different set of requirements because of the age range of the kids.
So you think that that's one of the biggest things facing, you know, one of the things?
Yeah, we have to face up to it. And, you know, I've been the mayor when the water system collapsed. And so I'm very proactive about saying, guys, red flag, infrastructure, school buildings, roofs collapse. Same thing with Newell Stadium. You know, you can't have that stadium be condemned. You can't be sitting at graduation with 2,000 people in the bleachers and have something happen. Mm-hmm. And stuff happens, Joey.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, people have, everybody has their own opinions. Now, any mayor, or if you're a politician, you're going to be criticized.
Elected officials, we like to call ourselves.
Oh, sorry. Oh, is politician a dirty word?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Elected official. Sorry. any elected official is going to be criticized.
Right.
That comes with the job, right? There are so many there's so many decisions where, like, just like this school one,
right.
Some school system's going
right.
to some one school eventually may have to get closed or something like that, and so you can't please everybody,
right?
And even though you're so well respected, like, how do you think, from when you first started to now, criticism, how do you deal with criticism the same way today that you did when you first started? Is it easier for it to roll off your back now than it was in the beginning? Because for example, like
right.
me on the blog, right?
Right.
I can get 15 comments a day, people saying, thank you for all you do. Oh, the blog is so wonderful, right? One person writes in to me and says, you are so full of yourself. You're so delusional and this, that, or the other thing. And that's the one that I take to heart
right.
personally. And
right.
I carry with me a staying up at night, staring right. at the ceiling, saying, Jesus, am I, you know, self-reevaluating myself. Like, how, like,
right.
and you know what I mean? It doesn't matter
right.
how many people blow
right.
smoke up my ass and how
right.
fantastic a job it is
right.
or whatever. The one that sticks with me, like, so how an elected official gets that, because I choose to cherry pick all the fancy, great, fun things to talk
yeah.
about.
Yeah, but
you have to deal with tough issues where
yeah.
where there's gray, and you know, sometimes it's going to be 50-50. 50% of the people are going to be upset, and 50% of the people are going to love you. So how? So,
well, you know, it's
that.
Funny. I have to that point at the public hearing for the hotel, the special permit, 200 people in City Hall, and I stood up. Went to the microphone, urged the city council to vote for it. And so out of all the people that spoke, including all the city councilors and all the people, pro and con, I was the only person that got booed. Okay?
Okay.
And I said, I'm the only one that got booed. And someone said, but didn't you hear the thunderous applause that overtook the booing? Because people were, and I was like, no,
right,
just hear the booze.
Just hear the booze, right? Yeah.
So, but I think that's part of, I don't know, that's maybe how human beings are wired, you know, is you just kind of, you don't hear the thunderous applause, you kind of hear the booing. But in terms of handling it, what I try to do and what I never want to lose, You can't just shut yourself off from the criticism. What I try to do is to glean the helpful information that's coming. You
the
know,
base, the base, what's underlying the,
right.
the anger what, or the criticism.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, so when it was funny when the veterans agent last year wanted to change the route of the parade, and he left out the Vietnam Memorial at the high school. Oh my God, the criticism rained down. It was called the Communist Pinko Mayor.
I remember.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And so, but in the middle of being attacked for that this went out on military websites, and so it came in from all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just, you know, you can't crawl up in a little hole and say, I'm the mayor and I decided, so that's the way it's going to be. You have to really say, okay, what did we miss here?
Yeah.
How did we get this so wrong? And where are we? Where's the support for this decision? And I reversed that decision within 24 hours. And I, you know, and the consequence was, unfortunately, 2 weeks later, the veterans agent resigned because I didn't stand with him. And I said to him, but you know what? I said, okay, the TV cameras are coming to interview me. Do you have any veterans to stand with me to support this decision?
Yeah.
He said, no one wants to go out in front. I said, well, how do you expect me to?
Yeah.
So even in the midst of all that criticism, you try to say, all right, what did I miss? What is constructive here? And then there are just haters out there, Joey.
Oh, yeah.
And the haters I don't even listen to.
The ankle biters, I call them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like when we get anonymous letters in the mayor's office, they
anonymous.
Go in the garbage.
Good. Good.
They really, good. They don't, people have to put a name to it. The Gloucester Times message board.
The comment section is.
I don't read.
You know, I, we have to have the Gloucester Times. The Gloucester Times is. Thankfully, our community still supports the Gloucester Times and everything like that. But their comment section is vitriol, and I wish that they would either moderate it or do away with it. It is,
yeah.
People are lobbying because people can say things anonymously that can be very hurtful to businesses or people.
Right.
And without any recourse at
right.
all.
Right.
And
yeah,
it's a sad reflection, and I feel like that, you know, Ray Lamont. I'm not okay. The paper they have to have a certain they what they are judged on is their traffic views. Right, they what they can sell to their advertisers
yeah.
is look, I'm
yeah.
having this many hits a day
right.
checking out our blog. When there's controversy and these people are writing in, they live for this controversy in these comment sections, right? And they write this terrible thing against
yeah.
someone else, and they're clicking back and they're clicking and clicking to
right.
see if anybody responded. So
right.
it's driving up the Gloucester Times.
Right.
So I almost feel like, and this could be wrong, but my feeling is, they're in a spot where they can't do away with it, because they do away with it, their numbers, they've backed themselves in a corner,
well,
because their numbers go way down on clicks and they can't show that to their advertisers. And then their bosses say to them,
well, they have three sister papers. They've got the Newburyport Daily News, the Salem News, and the Eagle Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
The Salem News and Newburyport have banned anonymous comments.
That's a good one.
Okay.
If they can't manage it.
The Eagle
really
Tribune and Gloucester Times have not yet. And so there's a new publisher who I would encourage to take a look at that. And it hasn't negatively impacted the Salem News or the Newburyport News to have the that vitriol removed. So I don't necessarily agree with you on that. You know, I hope
I'm wrong. It's a poor reflection. It makes the city look bad. If people are judging, you know, that's the record of the paper of record. I don't know what the term is, but people go to it.
Some people will call and say, you know, you better check out certain comments. And then I get my husband involved, and not in the sense that, you know, I just don't want to carry the water, you know, for myself. He'll defend me, you know, as my husband, and just say to Ray, you know, you're hurting our family.
Mm.
You know, some of these
comments. when it's totally inappropriate, anonymous, or whatever.
Lies.
It's like, really?
You know, where it encroaches on my personal life.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it's
yeah.
That's, I don't need it. No one needs
so,
it.
So the question was, like, so now at this point of your career, you know, as mayor, and when you started, has it been... Personally, does it affect you? Does criticism did it affect you more in the beginning of your when your first term than it is now?
Well, I think when you're, you know, that first year, you know, you can definitely the deer in the headlights. You know, it's you know, all this stuff coming down. And
did you take it more personally now, or is it the same? You took it as personally now as you did then, or
well,
did you never really take it personally? You just gleaned out the thing.
Yeah, you know, you just see. I had two terms on the school committee, and I was on the school committee when we closed the school, and so that's just you take the responsibility seriously. You know, you're an elected official. You presumably run on a set of values that you believe in and that people support, and so that carries you through the difficult decision making. But the criticisms.
And I should say, your whole thing, your record, and people, you are widely loved and respected in the city. I'm just talking
right.
about the
right.
1 out of 20 that
right.
and the haters and stuff like that. You know, this is what we're talking about.
The haters should just tune out.
Yeah, completely.
You just tune out.
Yeah.
You know, they don't exist in my world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's,
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but the rest of it, you just try to filter and learn from it. That's what I've gotten better at, is really, I'll have people just come into my office demanding to see me, and they come in with rage and, you know, anger, and, you know, maybe at the beginning you get that deer in the headlights look like, oh my God, how am I going to deal with these people? And then you just learn that they have something on their mind
yep.
that they're unhappy about, and you just have to sort of
get to the underlying
thing. Use your communication
yeah.
skills to say, all right, just thank you, but tell me what's on your mind, and
yeah.
I will see if I can try to help
yeah.
or have some of my staff help.
Melissa Cox said in her thing that she will listen to anyone as long as they are civil.
Yeah.
You know, she's not gonna sit there and get, you know, cursed at and stuff like that. And you know, so. But... So thank you for coming to us with the poll for the footbridge.
Yep.
Now, do you? I thought a lot of constructive dialogue was created by the poll. You acknowledge that it wasn't the perfect poll because we didn't put in the words.
Right.
No, you didn't put in the words for that. The other option was a temporary option.
Right.
But nonetheless, I think it brought up a lot of discussion.
It did.
And so, how did you feel about? Were you happy that the way it all went down?
I was. I really was. I think the dialogue that ensued, and what was interesting was it wasn't just limited to the comments on the blog. The phone at DPW was ringing. The phone in my office was ringing. Emails came in through the city website. Yeah. Emails came in directly from me. My favorite one was the guy who sent me pictures of a section of the bridge that washed up behind Stop and Shop. So he says, go get it. It's there. So I show the picture to Mike Hale. I go, Mike, is this the bridge? He says, that's the bridge from 2006. So I'm like, can you go get it, please? And he said what originally happened was it had washed way too far into the marsh, and that this winter the storms moved it so they can go retrieve it now. It can't be used again. But, you know, how many more bridges are up there? But I think the driving home point that is most helpful is that a permanent solution needs to be put together, which is going to be interesting to process to go through. And we have to prepare the community for that. If we have to tear that thing down and rebuild it, and it's an expensive proposition, the ground's been laid for it. That Conservation Commission has said you can't get in there and just tear up the eelgrass and whatever else is there every year or two.
A year or two. Now, the footbridge being redone and stuff like that, the process will be that you had said that you wanted to put there'll be a team put together to analyze.
Well, by the charter of the city of Gloucester, the city charter, anytime a designer or an architect is hired, a building committee has to be put together. Mm-hmm. So that's prescribed. Even the Fish Shack has a building committee. Newell Stadium has a building committee. West Parish School has a building committee. So anytime you have a construction effort or a redesign such as this, it's a building committee. And it is made up of some citizens, probably a city councilor, and city staff. Mm-hmm. And so they govern the all the work that needs to be done. And it's a good, deliberate process that yields good results, usually.
Right. Democracy or whatever. So here's the thing I'd like people to try to understand. And I think that a lot of people have artistic mindsets rather than business mindsets. And, you know, there's a finite number of resources that you have access to.
Right.
As a mayor, as a city councilor, as a city, you know, any organization has a finite. And I think a lot of people, you know, when they talk about, you know, when money has to be spent, they just say, well, we should have, you know, we should have new schools and we should have the best footbridge, you know, whatever the cost. And we should have, everything should be perfect. Every road should be paved with gold and everything.
Right.
But the reality is, like, and, you know, in the cemeteries and stuff like that. So the DPW is a resource that there is only so much manpower.
Right.
And there's only so much money to pay, you know, for all these things. What would you tell citizens for their expectations when, you know, because I see like someone outside of not an elected official that says these things, that everything should be funded all the time, to make them realize that if you put way more eggs into this basket, the eggs got to come out of a different basket.
Right.
So how do you get that point across, like, to citizens to understand? If you increase, you know, do you ever have those kind of conversations and say, yeah, it would be great to be able to keep all the outlying fire stations open all the time, but tell me where you want to cut? Because when we make that other cut, we're going to get a shitstorm from that place.
Right.
Like, how do you balance that? And what do you say to those people that would, you know, what do you say to try to make them understand it?
Well, you know, it's funny because the biggest problem that we have in terms of that perspective is sometimes with our own city council. So they'll say, I'm going to roll out a budget on May 7th. Mm-hmm. And it's going to have choices in it, and it's going to not fund certain things that are important to people to the extent that people would like to see funded. Mm-hmm. And so the mayor has the perspective of seeing all priorities and has also the burden of packaging that together into a balanced budget. Mm-hmm. All right?
Ultimately, it goes on you.
Absolutely. Yep. It goes on me. So we're going through that process right now, and we're going to balance a budget, and I'm going to hand it off to the city council. And they are going to see how, what their set of choices are going to be. They want to cut the schools to fund fire stations. They want to cut the DPW to fund schools. They want to cut police in order to fund fire. That we do this day in and day out in the mayor's office, okay? And so the city council is going to have a good appreciation for that. So that's one perspective that can be interesting for me, because I'm like, all right, fine, what are you going to cut? And I'll put it on them. In terms of citizens see the things that they care about. And so they become stovepiped, and for some people, only the roads are important.
That's right.
And they don't care about the schools.
That's right.
But ultimately, I do believe that the citizens, if you have good government and leaders that you trust and have a track record, that citizens place their trust in their elected officials to say, all right, you know,
Bill Belichick with the Patriots, right? If he doesn't use his first round draft pick and pick a superstar because he sees better value in two low round draft picks, he has the cachet with his track record,
right?
To say, and no one questions him,
right?
So when you have a balanced budget, or you get the city's bond bill lowered consistently,
right?
You know, the tax,
bond rating, yeah,
the bond rating, So people, you would hope that people take that into account and say, okay, she's doing this for a certain reason.
Right.
And how much do you put that on the newspaper, or, you know, to when they report these things and saying, oh, we're going to cut this, and not say, well, you know, people need to realize that, you know, it's.
Well, the messaging is difficult. And so I try to write my column every week with the Gloucester Times. It goes in on Saturdays. And that covers a whole range of things. But I'll do some columns about the budget. I have to be vigilant about accuracy of reporting. Mm-hmm. And so that can be frustrating, because it's just sometimes just not accurate.
Yeah.
At all. Yeah. But even some of the city councilors cherry pick the information and they skew it. And so it's this big dance and everybody's vying for God knows what.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it comes down on the mayor to produce a balanced budget. Mm-hmm. Period. End of story. And that's going to be done on May 7th, 7 o'clock p.m. City Council. I will make the budget presentation.
There you go. Very, very well. There it is. I appreciate you for you're making tough decisions, and any politician that looks at all the issues and doesn't play the did I say politician? I meant to say elected official.
Thank you.
but any elected official that makes the tough decisions, even though it's not going to be a popular decision, but they know in their heart of hearts that it is for the long-term best. Best for the city.
You know, I had 100 people at the State of the City presentation. That's the other thing I do to really educate people. We had over 100 people at the last State of the City. And this woman at the end, she raised her hand and she said, are water rates coming down? And I just paused and I looked at her and I said, no, not soon. Yeah. And I wasn't going to sugarcoat. And she just looked at me and I said, but the water system is stable. It is driving economic development in the city. Gorton's was able to do a $20 million expansion because of our investment in the water system, or keep all those jobs here and increase the tax base. We have multiple success stories now because we have a stable and reliable water system, okay? But we're shouldering it on the rates. So you have to tell that other side of the story of, you know, yes, it's the rate, but it's also the value that you get for it.
I went to New York City probably about 20 years ago. And I didn't feel safe in New York City 20 years ago. And Mayor, was it Bloomberg? Who's the guy before Bloomberg?
Giuliani.
Giuliani came, got in there. He was the first one. And, you know, he started cleaning things up and they raised a little bit of rates here and there, stuff like that. And I started going back to New York City about 3 years ago, and like the subway systems, like it costs a little bit more and everything, you know, but their parks are beautiful. Like you get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
I think like always trying to be the low. That place is a beautiful place to visit, and I don't think always like trying to. There's no glory. I think people romanticize like the grittiness of Gloucester, right, and stuff like that, and you know we want to maintain our character and stuff like that. But I think that there's something to be said for
being able to drink the water.
Being able to drink the water, exactly. You know what I mean? Like so, you know, trying to. You know, we do the best that we can, and when we have a leader that is fiscally responsible, and you have trust in them, then I think that's all you can ask for. So, you know, thanks for everything you do. Thanks for coming in today. Is there anything that you wanted to add?
We could talk forever. So much going on in the city. Mm. You know, it's pretty amazing. So much.
It's an amazing place, and you know, like I say. This place, every single week, the press releases come in and all the activities that are happening around town. And it is, you know, you have to pick between 10, like free or very low cost, great things that are happening. If they're happening at the Heritage Center, the Maritime Heritage or Cape Ann Museum or the Downtown Business Group now is doing great things. Like we are so lucky, this place, and it just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great city. And the sun is out. It's Pride Stride today. Another great community event. Mm. I'll be up there to help kick it off.
There you go.
Yeah.
Carolyn, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Joey.